glasses on the end of her nose so she could read with her sole functioning eye. What is bravery, and what is bravado? Returning to my hotel after dinner that evening in Beirut, I wondered uncomfortably whether Marie was reckless or I was a coward. I had my reasons for not going to Homs. Bad knees, an editor who thought the trip too dangerous, a book to write. But they were just excuses. Marie knew where the story was and would stop at nothing to get it. My reporting on Syrian refugees in Lebanon was done and I flew back to London. Marie spent a few more days organising her trip before she and photographer Paul Conroy set off on the perilous journey by foot, motorbike and jeep, at one point crawling through a storm drain. A few days later, I got an email sent by satellite phone. Made it to Babarammer. Nightmare here, but so anger-making it's worth it. I'm supposed to be applying for an Iranian visa, but I've left my Iran contacts at home. Have you got a number for that nice, relatively, woman in the Islamic guidance office? Marie was already planning her next trip. That Sunday, I read her story about the widow's basement, as powerful a piece of war reporting as any by her famous role model, Martha Gellhorn, who had covered the Spanish Civil War and the D-Day landings. It is a city of the cold and hungry, echoing to exploding shells and bursts of gunfire. Freezing rain fills potholes and snowdrifts in through windows empty of glass, she wrote. On the lips of everyone was the question, why have we been abandoned by the world? I had presumed that she was on her way home. But 2 days later, I heard that she had returned to Babarammer. I was angry with her. Why take the risk a second time? She sent me an email saying she had regretted leaving and other European journalists were also in Homs, so she felt she had to be there too. It was so urgent, she needed to get the story out before her paper on Sunday. We arranged a Skype call so she could do an interview for Channel 4 News, where I work. We spoke before she started the interview. Lindsay, this is the worst we've ever seen. I know, but what is your exit strategy? Pause. That's just it. I don't have one. I'm working on it now. The following morning, I woke thinking of a friend who had been kidnapped and murdered in Baghdad. That could be Marie, I thought. I was on the bus heading for work when a message came through from a Spanish friend in Beirut whose journalist husband was also in Babarammer. I think something terrible has happened to your friend Marie. Have you heard? The days that followed Marie's death merged into one another. A young French photographer, Remy Oschlick, had also been killed. The Sunday Times was desperately trying to get Paul Conroy out. He was badly injured, as was another French journalist, Edith Bouvier. I subsumed my grief and anxiety into talking about Marie on the radio and writing her obituary for the Financial Times. I found myself thinking of when we first met in 1998, after war had broken out between Ethiopia and Eritrea. A dozen or so journalists, including Marie and myself, were in Djibouti, the hottest place on earth, eyeing up a rickety Ukrainian aircraft that had been ferrying out aid workers and business people from the Eritrean capital, Asmara. It was the usual situation. All reasonable people were scrambling to get out, but a little bunch of madmen, the journalists, were trying to get in. A pair of Ukrainian pilots agreed to turn round and take us. Marie and I found ourselves walking together across the melting tarmac. Once on board, we sat together, and as the plane taxied down the lumpy runway, we noticed two objects whipping past the window outside, our pilots' sweaty shirts, which they had hung on the wings to dry out and forgotten to put back on. We peered through the open cockpit door. Yes, they were flying bare-chested. The aircraft lurched upwards, and the TV gear that had been piled up unsecured at the front gradually slid down the aisle. Marie and I laughed so much we nearly fell out of our seats. We were like two schoolgirls with the giggles in class. It's my first memory of her. Of course, I'd seen her before and knew her by reputation. But that was when we became friends, the time we couldn't stop laughing, thinking we might plunge to our deaths from the skies above the Red Sea. For the next 14 years, we would meet on the road or at the Frontline Club, the foreign correspondent's hangout near Paddington. She invited me to parties